everyone. This is Craig Brown. I'm Vice President of Producer Affairs, the National Cotton Council here in Memphis, Tennessee. Welcome to the Southwest version of the Stacks and Farm Bill webinar. We conducted two similar webinars yesterday, and it seemed to go quite well. For everyone's information, we have you muted on the speakerphone, and so that we cut down on the background noise. You have the ability, hopefully everybody can see the screen, and if you have questions at any time during the presentation, I encourage you to type in your questions to the chat room on the screen, and we will get to your questions as we go through the presentation. So you won't be able to ask your questions orally, but you can type in questions in the chat room, and we'll do our best to try to get them answered. Or if we don't have the answers, we'll get them and post them on our website. Speaking of that, this presentation will be uploaded on the council's website. It will be each of the webinars will have a specific file that you can load up the slides and the audio, and it'll be available to anyone that would like to access it. If you have questions after seeing the presentation on our website, you can send them to info@cotton.org, and they'll be directed to the proper person. So again, for those of you joining, we're getting ready to begin the webinar. If you have questions, type them into the chat room, and we'll be happy to try to address them. So we have several central locations that are hosting the webinar, and we appreciate that very much. Particularly, yeah, I know is doing some joint sessions, and maybe some others that we're not aware of. I also hope that we have a number of crop insurance agencies that are on the call, and we appreciate their participation. So let's begin. As I said, that this is the Ag Act of 2014, and we're going to talk about stacks, SCO, and then talk about Farm Bill implementation. As most of you are aware by now, the 2014 Farm Bill included many fundamental changes in cotton safety net. The direct and countercyclical payment programs have been discontinued for cotton and all other commodities. There is a greater reliance on crop insurance products. We maintain the marketing loan for cotton and all of the other covered commodities. Across the commodity lines, growers are faced with several new program choices. Decisions have to be made this year. This program is phased in over 2 years. Primarily, the FSA part of the programs are being implemented in the 2014 crop. The crop insurance portion of the program is being implemented starting with the 2015 crop. And we'll go into more detail on that as we get through the presentation. Unless otherwise noted, program benefits from FSA programs are subject to sequestration. This is a provision in the Budget Control Act that reduces cash payments to go to the deficit. Fortunately, none of the sequestration rules apply to crop insurance benefits. By now, hopefully you've all received or in the process of receiving your 2014 cotton transition payments. They're called CTAP for short. Because stacks was not available for the 2014 crop, Congress designated this cotton transition payment for cotton. It equates to 5.4 cents per pound on all 2013 base acres times the direct payment yield. It is subject to a separate $40,000 per legal entity limit. That is separate from the other payment limits in the Farm Bill. Eligibility is not affected by other program choices or planning decisions. And hopefully by now you've received those payments, or you've signed up for them in the process of receiving and got all your paperwork done. And hopefully everyone has received them by now. If you haven't, you need to have a chat with your local FSA office. So let's start talking about the crop insurance tools that are available, and we're going to start with STAX. Hopefully by now you understand that STAX is the acronym for Stacked Income Protection Program. It's a new revenue insurance product available in 2015 for purchase on all acres planted to upland cotton. It is administered by USDA's Risk Management Agency. This is another crop insurance product that you must purchase from your crop insurance agent. You cannot go down to the FSA office and purchase STAX, or as far as that goes, any other crop insurance product. STAX is an area-wide product. Its indemnities are triggered by revenue experience at the county level, or in some cases, combined counties if it's necessary to be actuarially sound. STAX indemnities are not based on individual experience, as is your buyout coverage. STAX coverage is offered by practice, by irrigated and non-irrigated, to the greatest extent possible. Here's a basic illustration that compares STAX to regular individual revenue coverage. You can see on your left, a standard buyout policy has a certain level of deductible and insurance coverage below that. STAX also has a deductible, a small deductible of 10%, and then covers a range of 90 to 70% of the loss. So in other words, if county revenue is greater than 90%, then there would be no STAX indemnity. If it falls in the 90 to 70 range, there would be a STAX indemnity. If the county revenue is at or below 70%, there would be a maximum STAX indemnity for those who purchase the product. This slide shows a basic calculation of the STAX product. It's broken down into three main areas. The first calculation is to calculate the expected county revenue, which is equal to the insurance projected price times the expected county yield. In this example, we projected an insurance projected price of, as an example, of 65 cents. In this example, the county yield is 1,000 pounds, and therefore the expected county revenue is $650. The next calculation is to calculate the actual county revenue to compare it to the expected county revenue. And the actual county revenue is equated to the insurance harvest price times the actual county yield. In our example, the insurance harvest price was 60 cents, down from 65. The actual county yield was 850, down from 1,000, and thus the actual county revenue was $510. Then you need to calculate the indemnity, and it is equated to the lesser of the amount that is 90% of the expected county revenue that exceeds the actual county revenue, or 20% of the expected county revenue. So the 90% of the county revenue takes into account the deductible. In this case, that would be $585. The cap on the STAX indemnity is 20% of the expected county revenue, so the maximum indemnity in this example would be $135. But the actual indemnity is the lesser of that expected, of that capped revenue, or the difference between the actual county revenue and the expected county revenue, the difference between 585 and 510. In this case, the indemnity is $75 per acre. And we're going to go through some specific calculations for various counties in the Southwest region later on in the presentation. Now let's talk about availability for STAX. STAX will be available and offered in all counties in which underlying cotton crop insurance products are available, and that equates to more than 700 counties across the Cotton Belt. To the greatest extent possible, it will be offered at the county level. If the county does not have enough acres or producers for actuarial soundness, then counties will need to be combined. So let's talk about the breakdown on how a county is designated. The first designation is a primary or standalone county. If a county has by practice, and remember this is by practice, irrigated and non-irrigated, county has 10 plus years of history of upland cotton by practice, 10,000 or more acres in the past 5 years by practice, and 20 or more producers in the past 5 years by practice, it is designated as a primary or standalone county. The actuarial offer will include yield history and final yield only for that county, again, by practice. There is some discretion for counties that miss the criteria by a small amount. We estimate, RMA estimates, that over around 80% of all the acres of production, of cotton production, fall in a primary county. Now, if a county is missing one or more of the criteria that we talked about before, it may be designated as a proxy county. And that means it is adjacent to a primary county. The actuarial offer will include yield history and the final yield of that county, that is the primary county, and the adjacent county or the proxy county. If more than one adjacent county qualifies, one is picked considering the county that has the best yield correlation and the acreage of the standalone county. But the primary county continues to stand on its own. It will not be impacted by the proxy county. Conversely, the experience in the proxy county and the primary county will be used to determine the indemnity for producers in the proxy county. We estimate that an additional 7 to 8% of the acres are accounted for in the proxy county. So between primary counties and proxy counties, almost 80%, or almost 88% of the cotton counties fall into one of those two categories. Now, again, if you need to expand that group to get the criteria, one or more of the criteria is missing, you may have to go to a circle group, and as the name implies, it's a circle of counties around a standalone or primary county. And again, the total experience in that circle goes into calculating the indemnity for growers who have production in those circle counties. Again, it doesn't affect the primary county. Estimates are, yet again, another 7 to 8% acres are accounted. And then if you have to go even further, you may have to go to a double circle or NASS cropping reporting district. That is fairly rare in the Cotton Belt. And then there's even the possibility of other group options called outliers, where you may have to go to the nearest standalone county for a practice, specific practice. In some cases, in a non-irrigated practice in the county, and this generally doesn't apply in the Southwest because you have a lot of production history. But in some cases in the Southeast and other areas, they've had to go to a single practice for both irrigated and non-irrigated. So if you want to find out exactly what your county is designated at, then you can go to this site on the RMA website. You can type in your county and determine whether you're a primary county or a proxy or whatever. These production areas will be reevaluated by RMA periodically to determine if they still meet the criteria or if, in fact, their experience has changed and maybe they get enough acres to become a primary county when they were proxy or vice versa. So it won't change every year, but periodically RMA will review the status of each county. Now, a very key component of the stacks calculation is the county yields, because that is a major, as we said in the first example, a major component of stacks indemnities and stacks coverage. The expected and actual yields for stacks are based on crop insurance data, RMA data, as opposed to NASS data. It allows for practice-specific data in more areas and enables a net aggregation into larger groups. The RMA yields for area plans are based on future projection of yields. It includes the projection of trend yields by practice, and exceptional years, high or low, can be given less weight in the trend yield calculation when calculating the projected yield. By law, RMA must compare these trend yields to the most recent five-year Olympic average RNA yields and take the higher of the two. So there's really two calculations that need to be made for determining the yield in the county that goes into the stacks calculation. This graph shows you a comparison of the correlation between NASH yields and RNA data. We have learned that the historical data, county data, RNA data, is now available on the RNA website. We have downloaded that data and made it into a more user-friendly file. And you can see at this site at www.cotton.org, on Econ, Crop Info, et cetera. And then you can look at the historical data for your county. And this is really helpful in trying to evaluate how past performance of stacks would have been. It'll also be valuable in looking at SCO data. There's a question that just came in, and that's, what is the Olympic average yield for stacks based on? It's an Olympic average of the most recent RNA data. So all of the yield data that goes into stacks calculations, as far as that goes for SCO calculations, are based on RNA data. They may look at NAS data in some cases where there's some underinsured areas. That's probably not the case in the Southwest region, since there's pretty good history of RMA participation. But hopefully that answers that question. Thanks for posing it. You have a lot of choices on stacks. Stacks is designed to work in combination with other policies. And one of the options is to include or exclude the harvest price option, which is available in all revenue products for crop insurance. And the harvest price option states that if the harvest price is above the projected price, then this option will indemnify yield losses at the higher harvest price. Overwhelmingly, purchases of individual revenue insurance include the harvest price option. And actually, I think probably when you're quoted in revenue products, most of the quotes include a harvest price option. You have the option of backing that out and excluding it, and the same will be for stacks. It'll show up as a revenue protection that includes the harvest price option, but you do have the option of backing the harvest price exclusion out of your coverage. The widest coverage for stacks is as we said before, 90% to 70%. We believe that is the for the price, that will be the probably the option that most producers will choose. But it's not necessarily the only option you can choose. There's a lot of flexibility. You can choose in both the upper and lower end of the range to purchase stacks in 5% increments. And you can see from this third bullet that there are actually 10 different coverage combinations that you can purchase stacks. And obviously, the higher level of coverage, the more will affect the premium. So you can customize even your stacks coverage within that 90 to 70 range. Stacks also can take advantage of a feature that is included in other area-wide insurance products called the protection factor. And this is a very good enhancement, a very good add-on for stacks that I think most producers will want to take advantage of. The protection factor allows you to choose at 1% point increments between 80 and 100%. Under the 90 to 70 stacks policy, the protection factor doesn't change when the indemnity is triggered. There still must be a 10% loss in the county, but the protection factor will adjust any indemnity up or down by 20% based on the selected factor. It does increase liability and increases premium. And here's an illustration of how you might look at the protection factor. You can see the various levels of coverage for stacks up to the maximum 120, $120 per acre, the indemnity rather of $120. If you had the protection factor, that $120 would jump to over $140. Or you can downsize your stacks production, your protection, and if instead of $120 worth of indemnity, you can take it down roughly just under $100. Obviously, that would be cheaper. Obviously, it's less coverage. So, protection factor is a real nice feature that I think producers will want to take advantage of, particularly for the price. Well, probably the most important question and decision that'll help you make your decision about stacks is determine the liability and the premiums that will be charged. RMA has recently, as of 2 months ago, actually released the expected yields for all counties. The premium rates were also published. However, since this is a revenue policy, the rates are published across a range of price volatility factors. This information is also available on RMA's website at this quote. And again, we're going through these slides rather quickly, but I would remind you that this presentation and the audio will shortly be posted on the council's website, so you can go back and get all of these URLs and access all this data at your leisure after the presentation concludes. This slide gives you a comparison of the premium subsidies for various crop insurance products for both individual yield and revenue products at a basic or optional unit level versus the enterprise unit level, also some area-wide yield and revenue products. And you can see the various levels of premium subsidy. But the important thing to note about stacks is that by law, stacks is required to offer an 80% premium subsidy, which of course means that producers only pay 20% of the premium for their particular county for their particular practice. And this is the highest available under any of the existing products. Now let's look at some calculations. We had to make some assumptions in doing these calculations. We'll start with Lubbock County in Texas. As in our other example, we assumed a 65 cent projected price, and you can see the difference in the county yields for irrigated 852 and non-irrigated pretty low at 333. Calculates the expected revenue, the 90% of the expected revenue. We assume the 1.2% protection factor, and which gives you a maximum indemnity of $133 for irrigated and $52 for non-irrigated. These are the premium rates that are listed for 2015 for various practices. And you can see down at the bottom line the premium rates for the producer premium rates for irrigated and non-irrigated. We're going to run through some other examples. This is in Dawson County down in the southern high plains, fairly comparable to Lubbock County, $12 and $5 maximum indemnity, a little bit lower on the non-irrigated because of the lower yield, and actually the higher on the irrigated. But we'll move into the southern rolling plains in Glasscock County. Premium a little high for the irrigated there. And again, probably because of the high average yield, and conversely, a fairly low non-irrigated yield. You see a $16 and $5 producer premium there. We go into South Texas and look at Nueces County. A 917 expected yield for irrigated, 488 for dry land. Maximum indemnities of 143 and 76, and a producer premium on the low range of $8 and $7 respectively. Shifting to Oklahoma, again, looking at some lower average yields because of, I'm sure, associated with the drought and the lack of irrigation availability. Pretty low non-irrigated yield. Maximum demis 132 and 47. Producer premiums, again, a little high for that irrigated of $12 and $6 for non-irrigated. And this one, Sumner County, Kansas. And this one puzzles us somewhat. We think that seems extraordinarily high for Kansas. They do have a very high irrigated yield and not a bad non-irrigated yield, so the maximum demity is up there, but this flagged our attention on the premium rate. It's something we probably will want to bring to RNA's attention. As far as that goes, we're gonna take a look at and try to evaluate a cross section of all the ratings and see where they may be somewhat out of line, and we'll be visiting with RMA over next year. There's probably not much we can do about it for this crop year, or for 15, but we will be looking at it and see if we can find some rationale or maybe get some adjustments made. This slide gives you a comparison and kind of gives you a history of what's happened, and it won't come to any surprise to any of you in the Southwest. This is the Lubbock County irrigated, non-irrigated yields from 91 through 13. You can see the wide variance and the fluctuation of yields. Again, this is no news for any of you on the call. And this is kind of puts it in a historical basis. This is assumes a 90-70 stack and 120% protection factor, and it shows you based on our calculations when stacks would have triggered by practice. And this is the illustration for Lubbock County. A big trigger on irrigated in 2008 and 11 and 12, smaller in 13, fairly steady in 8, 9, 11, 12, and 13 for dry land. But this gives you a kind of an idea if stacks would have been in place in the past, what the experience would have been. We don't have the numbers for 14, but we would have expected probably stacks to have triggered as well, particularly based on the price fluctuation. Same illustration for Dawson County, again, mainly triggering on the irrigated side, to a lesser extent on dry land. Glasgow County didn't trigger quite as much as the high plains, but again, nice triggers for irrigated practices. Nueces County, again, a little more balanced, big triggers for irrigated and some fairly substantial triggers historically for dry land in all years basically except 2010. Here's Jackson County, Oklahoma. Not much in the early years, but big triggers, particularly on irrigated and still on dry land since 2011. And again, here's Kansas. Again, more so on the irrigated, a little more variable on the dry land. Now, let's talk about stacks and the underlying coverage. Stacks are designed to be a complement to existing coverage. It may be purchased as the only crop insurance policy for that acre, which is likely not to be a common occurrence in the Southwest because there's high levels of crop insurance purchase, or it can be purchased in addition to a number of different coverages offered for individual coverage, even cat coverage, buy-up coverage, or group coverage, what's called RP products. The question comes back on the previous slide about the historical data. That is the that is the dollars per acre that would have been paid out by practice. So that was a good question. I'm sorry to make that clear. That was the estimated dollar indemnity paid out. Now it doesn't net out. It doesn't net out the premiums. So this would be the gross indemnities paid out per stack. Thanks for that question. Back to the existing coverage, it is important to note that if you combine stacks with a level of buyout coverage higher than 70%, the stacks coverage starts at that higher level. For instance, some producers with using enterprise pricing may have 75 or even 80% buyout coverage. And in that case, your stacks coverage would start at 75 or 80% respectively. You can't double insure the acre with buy-up and area-wide coverage. Conversely, if you have a 60 or 65 100 policy, you're going to have a gap in coverage because stacks only starts at 70%. And this illustrates that. This chart illustrates that the various levels of coverage and the uncovered range. I think illustrates what we just got through saying. So if you have those higher levels of coverage, over 70%, when considering stacks, it will certainly equate to a premium savings. However, you have to understand your level of protection is switching from individual coverage to area-wide coverage. And the question you need to ask, does your individual yield experience correlate with the area-wide experience? So these are the type of discussions and calculations that you're going to need to make in conjunction with your crop insurance agent and trying to figure out the best combination of buy-up coverage and area-wide coverage with stacks, and we'll talk about SCO in a minute. But these are the real critical discussions that you and your crop insurance agent are going to have to discern when you make your crop insurance choices before the sales closing date next February. We're going to switch now to, and again, I would encourage you to type in your questions, and we'll try to answer them as we go along, and then we'll have some time at the end to take questions again and go back to any part of the presentation. We're going to switch now to another option that's available to cotton farmers and other insured crops as well, and it's called the supplemental coverage option. SCO, as we refer to it, is a new product for upland cotton and other crops beginning with the 2015 crop year. For cotton, it may not be purchased on cotton acres already covered by stacks. Since they're both area-wide products, you really would be double insuring with an area-wide product. So you have to decide for your cotton acres if you want to purchase stacks or SCO, but you can't purchase both on the same acre. Obviously, you don't have to purchase either one. One of the main differences between stacks and SCO is that for SCO, it must include an underlying crop insurance product, because SCO provides coverage for a portion of the producer's deductible. And obviously, to have a deductible, you must have an underlying policy. The indemnities for SCO are triggered still on a county yield or revenue, depending on what your underlying coverage looks like. And so it's still an area-wide product. Another difference when compared to stacks, SCO has a 14% deductible compared to stacks' 10% deductible. The indemnities are triggered, therefore, if a county yield or revenue falls below 86% of the expected yield or revenue. We're going to look at some examples. The percentage by which the county yield or revenue falls below that threshold of 86% will determine the indemnity that is adjusted based on the value of the producer's individual indemnity. In other words, it will reduce your deductible basically by the same percentage that the loss, the allowable loss in the county. And the good thing about SCO is that it extends down to the coverage level of the underlying policy. So, depending on how your yield relates to the county, you may want to strongly consider SCO as a broader range of coverage. Now, it doesn't carry the same subsidy level as stacks. It's subsidized at 65% compared to stacks at 80%. Here's a chart that does those comparisons. For underlying coverage, you're required to have it for SCO, for stacks you're not. They're both based on area-wide triggers. Depending on SCO depends on whether you have a yield or revenue product. Stacks is revenue. We already talked about the deductible, 14 and 10 respectively, and that SCO goes down to your underlying coverage. Stacks is the minimum level, or the maximum level goes down to 70%, and the premium subsidies that we said are somewhat different, 65% for SCO and 80% for stacks. With SCO, the indemnity is paid as a percentage of the individual deductible, and for stack, it's paid on the county shortfall adjusted by the protection factor. And some key questions that you might want to ask when trying to evaluate stacks or SCO. Is your individual APH well above the county yield? Is your underlying coverage less than 70%? Obviously, the lower your underlying coverage, the broader range that SCO could trigger or could apply to if it's triggered. But remember that both stacks and SCO trigger off county experience at 90 and 86% respectively. Here's some examples, some comparisons of stacks and SCO at different levels of buy-up coverage. This is for Lubbock County irrigated. Again, we're using the same price assumptions. The county yields are the same because both stacks and SCO are using the same county yield data. Therefore, the expected county revenue would be the same. The triggers, the expected revenue are different because of the different levels of deductible between SCO and stacks. And in this example, you can see the maximum indemnity for stacks is $133. For the 70% SCO, it's $89. For the 60%, because it has a broader range of deductible, the maximum indemnity goes up to $144. Again, this is comparing that with stacks. You see a larger area of maximum indemnity, but it has to be evaluated based on the rates. And here you see the rates. They're fairly close. The 60% SCO is the cheapest of the three. And you see the corresponding premium, producer premium. And again, the subsidies are different for stacks and SCO, but you can see the comparison of $11, $12, and $16. For non-irrigated, same county, obviously lower expected county yields. And you see the producer premiums down here at the bottom. The maximum indemnities are $52 for SCO and stacks. SCO at 70 and stacks. The maximum indemnity goes up quite a bit on the 60% SCO, but so does the producer premium. Here's Dawson County irrigated. Again, you see the comparable numbers, the maximum indemnity for stacks, 163 compared to 177 on 60% SCO, but it comes with a higher producer premium. So those are things that you have to evaluate, the premium versus the maximum indemnity and how it correlates to your yield. We'll go through, here's Dawson non-irrigated. Again, much lower protection, maximum indemnity, but correspondingly lower producer cost. Glasscock County, these rates are for irrigated seem a little high, and again, that's some things we might have to look at. But it's probably because you have the bigger yield, and thus the maximum indemnities are fairly high across the board. And corresponding the producer premiums are on the high range. mean, look at that SCO premium versus stacks. And so those are things that they vary based on what happens in the county and what the average county yield is. And these are all real strategic decisions that you, the producer, and your crop insurance agent have to evaluate in evaluating SCO at different levels of buy-up coverage versus stacks, maximum indemnity versus producer cost. These are all key decisions that you will need to make annually as you talk about your crop insurance mix. We'll go through these counties as well, Nueces. You see the expected county yield for irrigated. Producer premiums on the low side look pretty good. Non-irrigated, lower yields, obviously, lower maximum indemnities. Still, that SCO premium is quite a bit different than the stacks are 70%. Jackson County, these costs are a little higher, particularly on the SCO. Something that you probably want to evaluate where you stand relative to the county. Non-irrigated, they come back down, but again, those SCO rates are a little bit higher, but your maximum indemnity is quite a bit higher than stacks because of the broader range of deductible. Kansas, again, we're concerned about the Kansas rates for irrigated and for non-irrigated. They seem to be on the higher range. But that's what we expect them to be for 2015. They'll certainly need to be reevaluated. We'll do our best to get them reevaluated. Now, in addition to stacks and SCO, there are some other crop insurance enhancements that were part of the changes to the Crop Insurance Act that were authorized in the 2014 Farm Bill. Some very good changes. One dealt with enterprise units. It made enterprise pricing a permanent part of the Crop Insurance Act. It makes permanent the 80% premium subsidy, and for the first time allows enterprise unit coverage by practice, which can be a very good option. Also, producers will have the ability to get different levels of coverage on any crop insurance product by practice. This was something that was hampered or restricted based on what your level of coverage for one practice is, dry land versus irrigated. But now you can buy different levels of coverage by practice, which again helps you really try to maximize your investment and your crop insurance risk. And one that everyone's anxious to learn more about, one that we were very happy to see RMA finally decide to implement for 2015, is the adjustment in APH insurable yields. I think most of you are probably somewhat aware of this provision. It was a very good provision in the Farm Bill and the Crop Insurance Act. This provision allows a producer to the option of excluding any year from his APH if the yield in that county in that year is less than 50% of the 10-year county average. If that county triggers, then the same adjustment is allowed in contiguous counties and allows the producer to separate irrigated and non-irrigated acres. There's still a lot of details left to be worked out. RMA has said that it will have more details this month. This month is quickly running out, so hopefully we'll know something by Christmas, and hopefully it'll be a nice Christmas present and won't be a lump of coal. But we're obviously waiting on the criteria for APH adjustment, and more importantly, what everyone is anxious about is to see what rating is applied to the APH adjustment. We feel sure there will be some rate adjustments. Hopefully they will not be to owners, and they still make it a valuable tool in enhancing your coverage. If you're a peanut grower, there's a new peanut revenue product. We don't have a lot of details about that, but that is supposed to be available for 2015. Another very important change is the fact that starting in 2016, a producer must be in conservation compliance if he purchases subsidized crop insurance, which is basically any crop insurance product. What does conservation compliance mean? It basically means that if you were in conservation compliance in your FSA programs for the 2008 and they're carried forward in the 2014 Farm Bill, then you're in conservation compliance for crop insurance. They're basically the same requirements. Sod buster, swamp buster, highly erodible land, didn't break out any farm wetlands. So basically, if you're getting insurance on land that was in the farm program before and forward in this farm bill, you're going to be okay. I would remind you, though, that if you're farming some land that is not in those programs, you need to make sure that you get in conservation compliance or that you're in conservation compliance to be eligible to purchase subsidized crop insurance starting in 2016. One important note, and this is one of the correlations to FSA with crop insurance, is that growers must file Form AB 1026 in their FSA office by June 1st of next year. And this is the certification that you're in conservation compliance. So keep in mind that form that must be filled out to ensure that you're eligible for subsidized crop insurance starting in 2016. We're now going to switch to other farm bill issues and kind of move away from crop insurance. There will be one more tie to crop insurance when we talk about ARC and SCO that I'll try to bring up at the time. Hopefully by now you're aware of some very key decision dates that must be met, some deadlines that must be met for FSA programs. By next February, by the end of next year, 2015, you landowners must decide whether to retain or reallocate covered commodity basis. They also have the option of updating payment yields. Obviously, base acreage is a key component of the new farm bill for covered commodities. Cotton is not a covered commodity, but basically it's your traditional program crops. All the benefits are paid out on base acreage. So it's important to decide how you want to possibly reallocate your base acreage or retain what was there at the end of 2013. That is a landowner decision. However, USDA regulations do allow a producer, a tenant who has the all-encompassing power of attorney, the word says all program decisions check, to make that decision for the landowner. But it's still a great idea, particularly if you have absentee landowners, to discuss these issues with your landowner. Obviously, if you don't have the power of attorney, it's going to be incumbent upon that landowner to make those choices and to make them in a timely manner. And so we would encourage direct communication between the tenant and the landowner. Likewise, the month after that, the end of March in 2015, all base acreages on each farm must either be designated PLC, ARC County, or ARC individual by commodity. And again, the power of attorney by the tenant is acceptable to make the decision on behalf of the landowner. But if you don't have that power of attorney, even a cash rent landowner has to be part of that decision. It's really important that all the tenants and the landowners make a decision. It's important that they all make the same decision, and that's by crop, by farm. There's no cross compliance or offsetting compliance. That is, you can decide one program for a crop base on one farm and a different program for the same crop base on a different farm. But within each farm number, tenants and landowners must come to a consensus on whether they want their base acreages to be in PLC, ARC County, or ARC individual. There is a penalty for not deciding or not agreeing on what the decision is to be, and it's a severe penalty. And the penalty is that if you can't decide or don't file enough by the deadline, you're ineligible for program benefits for 2014, and the default goes to PLC for all base acreages for 2015 forward. So be aware, make sure you start talking to your landowner, particularly absentee landowners, and make sure you've made the proper arrangements and have the proper discussions. Get all the necessary information and make sure that you're in position to make these decisions in a timely manner. And then if you didn't have enough involvement with your FSA office, you have to go back by the end of summer of 15 and actually sign up into these programs. So determining the base and the yield, determining the PLC or ARC, there still has to be a third decision to actually sign up in the program. This farm bill requires annual sign up for these programs. So you're going to be spending a lot of time at your FSA office, fortunately or unfortunately. We believe that for starting in April of next year, you will be through the summer of next year, you'll be able to both sign up for the 14, which is already harvested, and the 15 crop, which may have already been planted. And then, of course, payments under PLC or ARC for the 14 crop won't be made available any earlier than October of 2015. We've already mentioned that the payment acres for PLC in ARC County are calculated on 85% or on base acres, and they're factored by 85% for all covered commodities. Again, cotton is not a covered commodity for FSA programs. But the benefits are also approved to covered commodities planted on generic base. And this is probably one of the more confusing provisions of the Farm Bill. It's a very generous provision. That's one that gives farmers with generic base, which is basically anyone who had a cotton base in 2013, that base on your farm now is converted to what's called generic base. And any covered commodity that is planted on the farm is first attributed to the generic base acres. And up to the maximum generic base acres, the additional acres planted by that covered commodity adds to your payment acres for that crop. Now, that's a mouthful. But basically, you have to remember that the original base acres on your farm are decoupled. That means you're not required to plant that crop or any crop to be eligible for those program benefits. The generic base acres, however, do come with a coupled provision. That is, you must plant any particular covered commodity to be eligible to increase your payment acres for that particular commodity. And that's basically what we covered on this slide right here. I should have made the jump. So let's look at it as an example. And for those of you who have been to the meetings, either the latest round or the earlier round of meetings last spring, we use this basic example to try to explain generic base. It's almost an oversimplified example, but we think it actually makes the case. In this particular farm, this farm had a total amount of base acres of 200 acres. 100 acres of it was wheat, and 100 acres of it was generic, which meant that in 2013, the farm had a cotton base of 100 acres. So in 2015, this farmer planted 100 acres of cotton, and he planted 100 acres of wheat. So he planted the whole farm, half in cotton and half in wheat. So the question is, how many wheat payment acres does he have? Well, since he only planted one covered commodity, all the generic acres that he planted and all the wheat acres that he planted are attributed to the generic acres, and therefore he ends up with 200 acres of wheat payment acres that are factored by 85%, which means he has 170 wheat payment acres for 2015. In effect, he planted his cotton on the decoupled wheat base. And I know that tends to confuse people, but that's how you really kind of need to think about it. If you'd have planted more than one covered commodity, say wheat and soybeans or wheat and grain sorghum, there's a factor to allocate the ratio to the generic base. if we change this example, and on this farm he planted 200 acres of cotton and no wheat, he would still have 100 acres of wheat base because that's a decoupled base. So generic base is a very nice feature. It gives producers a lot of planting flexibility to decide which crops they want to plant and to increase their payment acres for any of the respective cover commodities. This is an annual decision. You can plant a different cover commodity each year on your farm, and to the extent that it's not exceeds its generic base, you increase the payment acres for that base over what you had. Or even if you didn't have any particular base on that farm, let's say you didn't have any wheat base on this particular example, you would create wheat payment acres by planting on the generic base. Okay, now that everybody, I can see everybody nodding their head, fully understanding generic base, or typing frantically, I'm not sure which is the case. We're going to switch over to the marketing loan. Cotton and other commodities, other covered commodities, retain the marketing loan. For cotton, the formula changed to being an average of the AWP for the two most recent completed marketing years as of October 1st. The loan rate doesn't change during the marketing year, and the range is 45 to 52 cents. The loan rate has already been announced for 2015. It remains at 52 cents. The biggest change, and the one that is causing consternation to marketers and producers, is the fact that now marketing loan gains and LDPs are subject to the overall payment limit. Let's talk about payment limits. This farm bill institutes a new payment limit, replacing the $40,000 and $65,000 payment limits for direct and countercyclical payments in the past farm bill. This farm bill payment limit is $125,000 per entity. It applies to ARC and PLC payments, but as I said before, now includes marketing loan gains and LDPs. There is a separate payment limit for peanuts, but the peanut limit, conversely, also includes marketing loan gains and LDPs for peanuts. Fortunately, none of these payment limits apply to crop insurance indemnities or subsidies. And more unfortunately, USDA is trying to develop an interim and longer-term process for applying marketing loan gains to the payment limits. Co-ops and producers will be responsible for any overpayments on marketing loan gains as applied to their limits. We have developed a briefing paper that is available, will be available on our website for you to kind of get a better idea of the process we've been going through. But I can tell you it's a very frustrating process. Growers are going to be frustrated because they won't be able to reconcile the application of the marketing loan gain or LDPs to their overall payment limit in a timely manner, certainly for this crop year and maybe even for next crop year. Our most optimistic hope is that USDA will be able to give a reconciliation or a status update to growers before the October 2015 payments go out on PLC and ARC programs. So it's a very frustrating process. It can have implications on how producers market cotton, how they price cotton, and it's very concerning to the entire industry. We're working as closely as we can with USDA to facilitate a more transparent process. Unfortunately, for this provision to change, it has to be changed legislatively, and we're looking for any opportunity to do that as well. In addition to the changes in payment limits, this farm bill also makes a substantial change in the AGI means test. If the three-year average total AGI is $900,000, then you become ineligible for PLC or marketing loan gains and LDPs. The change, of course, is that this year in this farm bill, there's no breakout of farm and non-farm AGI. It's total AGI, although the threshold is higher. The new procedure for AGI, there's a new procedure for AGI certification that has to be done. IRS will verify if you say you're not eligible. It's very important for producers to file the CCC 941 with their FSA office. That form is a self-certification saying that you do not that the 900,000 AGI does not apply. This is something that has to be done annually, and it's very important for loan redemptions and eligibility for any payments. We believe that co-ops and LSAs can redeem loans at the AWD without waiting for the verification from IRS, and producers can redeem loans at the AWD or receive LDPs if they have that certification on file prior to any verification by IRS. If it's determined that you are ineligible, then repayment will be required. Okay, we have a question, which is a very good question. The question, I'm going to read the question to you. The question is, how will a program crop planted after failed cotton be treated? Will it be eligible for PLC, or is there a date it has to be planted by? That's a question that has come up a number of times. We've discussed it with FSA. We've discussed it with congressional staff, and our best understanding, and we believe the ruling that is out there, is that if you plant cotton on your farm and it's failed due to the weather for whatever reason, you will be eligible to come behind it with a covered commodity, for instance, grain sorghum, or I guess wheat would not be an example, could be planted before, but the corn or another program crop. And we believe that will fit the generic acre planting, and that you will be able to increase your payment acres. The timing probably requires you to plant it within the normal planting windows. Obviously, if you take the insurance on the insurance side for the cotton, you can't double insure the acre. So that's a crop insurance issue. But as far as FSA is concerned, it's our understanding that since cotton is not a covered commodity, that if the cotton crop has failed and you come behind it with a covered commodity such as grain sorghum, that it will increase your payment acres for that year for PLC and R. Winter wheat is a little bit different because you border two crop years, but probably if the winter wheat fails and you come behind it with cotton in that year, we believe the same application would be made. So hopefully that answers your question. It's a very good question. It's one that has been asked several times, and hopefully that's the correct interpretation, and more hopefully that's how the county offices will implement the provision. That's the direction we've gotten from USDA Washington. So again, keep asking those questions. We appreciate you sending them in. Don't worry if you make typos. We can probably figure out your questions. I'm not a very good typer either. Okay, we've come to the end. There are a number of resources that you can avail yourself to help some of these decisions. The Texas A&M Ag and Food Policy Center has a very good involved decision tool. It requires quite a bit of data input, but it's probably one of the better tools out there to help you evaluate program decisions. It does have a crop insurance module that I think will have some utility past this year when you have to make all these one-time irrevocable decisions. University of Illinois has a similar tool. Probably the A&M tool is more adaptable to southern crops. There is resources available at the RMA Farm Bill page, and you can see the URL site there. FSA has a website that talks about the various PLC and ARC programs and eligibility requirements. We know there's a number of extension workshops that are ongoing, and we would encourage you to take advantage of every opportunity to get more education. I think it's really important, particularly on the and especially on the crop insurance side, that you avail yourself of all the information that you can on these new crop insurance products, that you make sure you're working with a well-educated and up-to-speed crop insurance agent who can help you evaluate the right mix of crop insurance products for you, and also to correlate maybe the FSA decisions into your crop insurance mix, because that's really the tools that are available, whether you like them or not, that are available for risk management in this farm program, both with FSA programs and with crop insurance tools. So that concludes our presentation. We'll keep the line open here for a minute. If anybody has any last minute questions you wanna type in. But we appreciate everyone's participation. I hope you found this process meaningful and workable. If it's successful, we'll continue to use it as an education tool. I think it's a good tool for us getting the word out. Again, I remind you that this entire presentation is going to be available on our website shortly, the audio and the slides, and you'll have the availability to type in any questions you have post session to info@cotton.org, and those questions will be directed to the proper person. So again, we'll keep the line open here just for a minute in case anybody's got any last minute questions, but we appreciate you being on the line. And you want to hear the presentation again, we're doing one for the Western region at 1 o'clock Central Time, if my voice holds out. See that someone's trying to type a question. Here's the question. If the question is back to stacks, will there only be a payment made if the county has a production loss? And the answer is no. This is a revenue product, so it'll be a combination of yield loss based on the projected county on the county guarantee, but it could be a combination of price and yield. This is a revenue product. Probably in many cases, the revenue may trigger even if the production doesn't, but a combination of the two, because it is a revenue product. Another question is that if a stacks payment is due to the producer for 2015, when should he expect to receive the payment? Very good question. So working with RMA, obviously the county data has to be compiled and before there can be any calculation of a stacks indemnity. So we're working with RMA to try to facilitate as timely an announcement as possible so that they don't wait until all county data for every county is calculated. We're urging them to, as the county data becomes available, to make the announcement so the indemnities can be paid. But we'll have to see how they actually phase in the calculations, and we'll be encouraging them to do it as quickly as possible. So that's about the best I can tell you right now. But obviously, the county data has to be compiled before an indemnity can be calculated. I think someone else is typing, trying to type a question. Okay, well, I think we'll close out the presentation. Again, I remind you, it's going to be posted on our website. We appreciate your attention. I hope you found this exercise useful. And we'll visit with you again soon. And we'll close out this session.